The reason that things got heated in here was I was trying to do the math. There is a $7 billion gap in our budget in the state of Illinois. And it was not $7 billion last year. It was about $3.5 billion to $4 billion. And it's not a gap. It is the amount of money it takes to keep our state running, all of our social services, education, keeping our roads safe, all the different things. And I guess include, is that include the pensions, the funding the pensions as well, Senator? Your mic is on, yes.
I would just like to say, for the record, Scott and I were passionate. We weren't heated. We're very
heated.
Collegial.
I need heat when I'm passionate. Yes, I get heated when
but
I'm passionate.
But here's the point is that that you raised is that every month we have a $36 billion budget and we typically owe, just like any other business, it's $36 billion, about $3 billion every month. And it got down to $3 billion. And so that's not
that really wasn't
like you had bills that were significantly in arrears. That's what we owed, and that's what you should owe every month. You should owe $3 billion, 30 days, right? And so most of those bills were within 30 days. So there's now it's not that situation right now because there isn't the revenue in place to address it. So,
I'm going to have some of this wine. Scott, your answer to the, you want to respond?
No, he's right.
You're not supposed to put your mouth on that.
Did you just hear that? Hold on a second, I was in the basket.
Support? It?
Like, yes.
Don't sleep on burial.
That seems a little messy.
I would back away.
Are you trying to help?
Because
he's reaching for it. Like,
let him do.
Okay, Wiley, will you please drink while they talk about politics?
Oh, here we go. He's going to show us how to do this.
All right. Oh, that's not happening. I'm not going to do it.
Wait, yeah. Do that.
Oh, you have to do that.
No,
you have to do that.
I'm not going to do that.
Here, I will do it.
You don't even drink wine. You can't.
Listen, I've been to church before.
Oh my God. That was it?
That was it.
So you were catching rainwater.
So we are drinking. There you go. See, he did the same thing I did.
No, I didn't.
Please pass that off.
Full
All right, then.
He took a full hit, man.
I'm an expert.
That's right.
The best ever.
Please pass that to Warren. Warren would like some video of himself drinking from the, what's it called?
Perone.
Oh, it looks like a big, it looks like a fancy neti pot.
Stop it.
Best radio ever. I'm going to be in so much trouble.
My sinuses are totally clear now.
So how? Why are we drinking it? Why are we pouring it into our mouth from a height? Like a?
Why don't you?
Is it affect the way you consume the wine?
No, I mean, the actual act of what we're doing, it's more of just a social way to drink the wine.
That was very impressive, Scott.
There's certain wines you'll put in there and you'll pour it like that into a glass to kind of aerate it and you know. Open it up a little bit.
Chris is very talented at that. Well done.
I love the way you said that. She's very talented at that.
Until I commented.
We're going to a break.
I didn't mean to. Do you think that would work in the Senate if you just passed around a Perone for all of the legislators to, you know, before they make an argument?
Yeah,
before they respond to
a
debate.
I think it would work.
That would be kind of cool. I'd
bring everybody together.
Figure
out a way. If you don't like it, bring lemonade or whatever.
Right, exactly. It doesn't have to be alcohol. It can
no.
Be, yeah.
I it's just amazes me with there are so many colleagues that I worked with got along with very well, and you could figure out a way to pass a budget, and we've done it in the past, and it should be able to get done. It's just one of these things that I think is so tragic right now in our state. It's just,
well, I'm not quite understanding the governor going around and saying, and I don't know if you're following this, Scott, that he's saying the Democrats have failed, they've not passed a budget, they won't meet with me on this temporary budget that I've proposed, even though a week before there was actually a temporary budget that was also proposed and he dismissed.
Right.
So I'm not sure what happened.
It wasn't to his liking. I mean, it didn't fit the...
But there was time to talk about it rather than the 12 hours before
there
the
is.
Deadline.
You know, I really believe this is, again, one of those... How can I say this on... over terrestrial radio, this is one of those disturbing moments where both sides are so full of crap and they're both just killing the clock until the election. Rauner thinks that he's dumping a bunch of money, thinks that he can make some headways in the Senate and make get rid of the supermajority in the House, Madigan's supermajority. He'll always have a majority. And I think the other side is playing the same game. And it's, you know, and then some poor kid who's with a disability down in, you know, Peoria, mm-hmm. is losing his services in the meantime. It's preposterous and it's hurtful. And I hope we throw all the bastards out, frankly. Republican, Democrat, I mean, it's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. I don't know. I don't know where we go from here as far as throwing anybody out. If people are paying attention to their elections, some people are going unopposed. I know a lot of legislators found out the day I was there. Actually, on May 31st was the last day to announce your candidacy. So a lot of them are actually not being opposed in their local elections. But if there is something, and I've talked to a lot of legislators, and tomorrow, by the way, we will have Senator Connolly and Senator Tom Cullerton in studio during our budget crisis corner to talk about their perspectives and what they have seen, and whether it's in the last year during their tenure as senators. You know, people will keep saying, well, this is because the Democrats have created the situation, or this is because the Republicans, you know, want to cut social services. Everyone has a finger to point, but here's my thinking is, okay, fine. We know what has happened. What are we going to do? Or we have an idea of what has happened. What are we going to do next?
How do you solve the problem? Right. And I think there's been a group that's been meeting for a long time. There's been a working group since, a bipartisan working group, and they've come up with a budget, a proposed budget, and they have revenue, they have spending reductions, and I think that what you need to do is have an opportunity to sit down and have a vote on it. Right. And if you can't get that, at least, you know, vote for the temporary fix, vote for a temporary budget, and at least get the organizations the funding that they need and the support they need. I mean, look, we were talking about this today. You know, the organization I work for, ChildSurf, and we were saying, well, what kind of questions should when we talk to people? We go a lot of time. We talk to faith-based organizations, talk to churches, community groups, and what questions should you be asking your legislators about the priorities that you care about, right? And so the question is, okay, well, what is your position when it comes to funding education? Well, I support it. Oh, great. Okay, where are you going to come up with the money?
Right.
Are you going to vote for a budget bill that does that? I mean, do you support human services? Sure, I support human services. Okay, what human services specifically? What are your priorities? What are the programs that you think are working? Well, I think this is working. How are we going to fund it? And this is how we're going to fund it. See, the thing is, it's really not that hard. I've done it before. We've passed several budgets in the past. It should be achievable, and I think to Scott's point, there's more than enough blame to go around. I think the time is just to work together,
and
get something done.
Absolutely, and just sit down and say. Obviously, pensions are the big stinking 800-pound gorilla in the audience and in the crowd. You have to in the room. I'm getting my metaphor mixed up. You have to address that, and you have to address it in a serious way. Every reasonable plan, Senator Dan mentioned, I think you were during the break, that they passed and the state Supreme Court continues to shoot down because for some reason this is in our Constitution, which is weird.
What way do you mean it has to be reformed? And going forward, the pensions that already exist or the ones that we create in the future?
No, that's a contract. And
right.
That's the thing. I mean,
okay.
Every conservative worth their salt will say that's a contract. You made a contract with that individual and you have to to live up to it. But going forward, I think switching to a 401k or some other pension that's not quite as generous, or at least as large as these are, and certainly not subsidized by the state, this degree. I mean, would you disagree with that?
Well, you even corrected yourself and caught yourself on the word generous, because we have people who commit themselves to different professions, right? Whether they're a teacher who their responsibility is to take care of our children, and they do. They take care of our children at young ages, and they educate them, and they're there for 8 to 10 hours a day, and they turn themselves over to them. Sometimes they are paying out of pocket for their supplies. For some of them, they make sure that they are fed, because these kids maybe come from low-income households. And they make sure that these kids are equipped, or they do their very best to make sure these children are reading and writing at the levels that they hopefully have the potential to achieve. We have firefighters and police officers whose job it is to run toward danger when the rest of us would run. And we need their help, right? And we want those people to be there. We pay when we say, oh, I don't want to pay higher taxes, what are we willing to give up? Are we willing to give up our safe roads? Are we willing to give up our first responders? Are we willing to give up education, right? So when it comes to pensions, I don't know that it's generous or, you know, as you said, it's an obligation, it's a contract. And going forward, asking people to turn themselves over to those professions, it's important to maintain those obligations and those promises.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think any reasonable – well, okay, there are some, but I don't think any reasonable person would step forward and say those who are currently in the pension system, we're going to just cut your, you know, 30%. I mean, that's criminal. It would be – and also wouldn't stand up in the court of law.
Right. No, it hasn't. It actually was overturned by our Supreme Court when they tried to –
there was a bill that was passed, there was a couple of bills that were passed, and one that was settled on was the one that was determined to be unconstitutional. But there's another bill – out there that's a choice model, where you choose someone who currently had a pension could choose between getting their compounded cost of living adjustment and not getting health care for free for the rest of their life. And that's one of the deals. And it's like, okay, this is the choice that you have.
Right.
But the point is, it represents about 22% of the budget. And I was thinking about this today. You know, we're doing our health care plan for our employees at ChildServe, and the cost is going to go up probably $102,000 this year just for health care. But when you think about that, then you think about, you take the state budget, the pension costs were increasing by about $800 million a year.
Right.
Right. And you look at like what the deficit would be each year. But most people that you talk to who have a pension are willing to, you know, to make some kind of sacrifice given the challenges. But they also, like, if you've invested your money, right? I mean, you're getting paid. You're getting deferred payment for work that's already been done.
Exactly.
Essentially what a pension is.
Right.
So, but that being said, most people say, look, I'm willing to, you know, to do my fair share. But as long as we figure out ways where everybody's in it together. And that's the model. It needs to be a team approach to this. And because everyone's getting hurt. The problem is, there's a proprietary focus in saying, you know, you're not going to touch me. And that's fine. But meanwhile,
right,
those who don't have a voice and those don't have the strength or the they don't have the support from a significant lobbying effort. Right. Those who, you know, parents are working two jobs and trying to take care of their kids who are struggling or have challenges developmentally or mentally or emotionally, they're, you know, they don't have that benefit. And so our job as public servants is to stand up for people who don't have somebody to stand up for them. And so
that's the main thing that you and Scott both meet on the middle ground.
Completely agree.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a matter of getting there. Let me take a quick break here because I know Elif is like, I'm just going to give up asking Patty to take a break. More after this on 7:30. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We have a full studio and we're having a great time, but we're also talking about important subjects. We have with us Scott Stantis, who is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Senator Dan Katowski, who is the CEO of ChildServe, helping at-risk children make sure that they can lead the lives that they should, have the potential and feel safe and comfortable, even if it means having a roof over their heads or having a mattress that isn't someplace scary to be. I mean, that sounds weird to people. Explain that a little bit. I know that you were working with Mattress Firm and some other organizations to make sure that kids have warm beds.
One of our problems that we had early this year, we had a lot of our kids, they leave for the weekend and they go and they stay at some places. And because of the nature of their life, sometimes they bring bed bugs back with them. And there was a problem that we had in some of our houses, and we had to take care of it. And we did. And we treated the homes for it. But then Mattress Firm was kind enough to donate mattresses that had basically a cover on them to help prevent bed bugs from from spreading and making a home at
because you want to go to bed. That's the time you should feel safest, when you're feeling emotionally vulnerable.
But I want to say something. Can I say something about So this week was really cool. We have this early childhood program, and it helps. We help infants to 5 years old, kids who are living in poverty, and we provide home-based services. So we go in the homes, and predominantly single moms, but we help kids and their parents to reach developmental milestones and get them kindergarten ready. And make sure they understand healthy eating habits and safe and secure homes. It's the whole idea is to break the cycle of abuse and neglect and poverty. And we were able to get 660 kids to be kindergarten ready, right? Last year, which is great.
Wow.
But But what's so cool is we had a graduation this week that I went to. You go to these graduations. There's a graduation for everything right now, right? I had a graduation to bald school when I lost all my hair for a party for me.
Right?
It's great, Warren. We had a graduation for our kids and who've worked really hard in that program. And this is a program that is so, I met a lot of young girls, young boys who are so excited and so thrilled about the fact that they're getting to the next level. And there's a great investment support. But here's the deal. We spend, as an agency, $2,400 per family per year, right? So it's a couple hundred dollars a month to make sure we get kids who are living in poverty to be kindergarten ready. And that leads to them being successful in life, right? If they end up being in prison, it costs taxpayers $30,000 a year.
Pay now or pay later.
Right. So One of the things I found out is that for kids, when they get to a group home level, if you're in a group home, if you don't have parents, and you know, we're providing round-the-clock care 24/7, therapist, we provide support, recreational allowance, all these are for teenagers, right? Vocational training. It costs $130,000 per kid per year.
Really?
Yeah, because it's so intense. Because there's mental health treatment. There's hospital issues. There's all sorts of things. But if you invest in the front end, it's $2,400. Per child
to get them kindergarten
per
ready.
Year to get them kindergarten ready, and that's what you want to do. That's where you want to see the investment. That's a perfect example of like the return on investment. This is a government program. We get government support. Taxpayers support it, and it makes a huge difference in the lives of kids.
We have a listener who had a question about something we brought up earlier when we were talking about professions and the pension reform. Larry, what was your question?
Hi, good evening, Patty.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I started as a college professor at UIC in 1976 and retired thanks to Governor Edgar's generous actions after 30 years of working. But my concern is every paycheck that I received, I had money withheld and paid into the state SERS retirement system.
Right.
I've received no subsidy from the state of Illinois. My health care is covered by Medicare, a federal program, and also starting in 1984, when the federal laws were changed, I had to pay into Social Security, even though under state of Illinois
you
law.
You can't draw on that. Right.
I will never receive a penny of it.
Right. So what was your question as far as...
So the question is, where is the subsidy that I'm getting? That everybody keeps saying that pensions are being subsidized. Pensions are not being subsidized.
It's what you paid in. Right.
And I'm getting
at a higher rate than most people pay into their pensions.
Right. And you waived. I was unaware that you were paying Social Security only because I thought you waived that to enter into the pension program.
No.
Okay.
Just not eligible to receive it.
They pay into it. Yeah.
So, but let me ask this. I mean, the amount that you will take out, and this is, I don't have the math in front of me, and I apologize for not having the solid numbers, but the amount that you will take out far exceeds the amount that you put in over those 30 years. Is that right? Dan,
no,
can you help me here?
No. Not at all. That's not true. As an economist, I can tell you that that's not true because the money, if I had taken it myself and invested it, like the SERS retirement program is supposed to be investing our money, our dollars, through the 1970s and the 1980s and 90s when the markets blew up and the economy was going gangbusters, I could have made a lot more money with my money than giving it into the state retirement plan.
So it would have been far better if you had a private account yourself and invested it yourself then.
Not even a private retirement account. Just taking the money myself and invested it any way I wanted to.
Exactly.
So 403B or 401K would have been nonsense if I had. So when people are talking about that, I'm getting so much more back now. No, that's not true because the state had my money
right
from the 1970s and it invested it and was making returns, positive returns. So they were investing the money in a positive way, generating funds, and we're sharing in theory what was earned by the people running the plan. I don't know what people are talking about in terms of subsidized health care or getting extra money back. It's money that was earned.
Yeah, most people don't understand that concept, Larry, that you loan the money to the state and that give the state the opportunity to invest. And so it's also predicated on a performance that's been averaged about 8% a year.
That's right.
And so to the point was, it's like, you know, people would say, well, if you had invested the money on your own, you know, you would have made more money. But, you know, when the markets collapsed, you also wouldn't have had the protection that comes from being invested with a group. But the point is, you bought into the notion, which, you know, my father was a community college teacher, is that, look, I'm taking less in my salary so that I can have a retirement. But also, I believe in the concept of investing
in my
government,
state. Yeah.
Investing in my state so that we can invest in education, invest in families, invest in the future. And that's the notion. I think it's lost on people.
I think it's a lost notion now.
Ella's head's going to explode. Okay. She's like, I don't know how I was left in charge of this show. Larry, I am super late for news. Did you want to hold on through the news or do we have the conversation to your satisfaction? You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We're saying goodnight to Warren Price of European and U.S. Auto Body at 4080 North Broadway. Thank you very much for stopping by with Michael's Pizza. He's tired of being in the crossfire between me and Carissa. Carissa and I are about to just wrestle with each other across this board right now because she's all like, I like white wines, and I'm all like, I like red wines. And then Wiley said, why don't you have some rosé? And then we felt good. Good night. Yes, the Thin Mints are all yours, sir. Thank you so much. Senator Dan Katowski joins us in studio. He is also the CEO of ChildServe. That's ChildServe. Leave the E off.
Yeah, where's the E? Because the work isn't done yet.
Their work is not done yet. Go to childserve.org.
A lot of work to do.
For information on how you can help children at risk. We also have Scott Stantis, who is the political cartoonist of the Chicago Tribune. And we have Carissa Schaefer, who's celebrating the second anniversary of Knife and Tine, our favorite restaurant here at Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. And Noah Wiley.
Well, it's raining like crazy out there, so.
Wait, he's down there?
No, not Noah Wiley. Just Wiley.
Esmeralda, don't get excited.
That was the weirdest brain fart that I've ever had on the show.
How did you get to know Knife and Tine? What's the love story there?
The love story is, and Larry, hold on one second. We'll get back to talking about pensions.
Larry.
I started my show in 2014. Senator Katowski was my very first guest on a Sunday night. There was a restaurant that would tweet at me once in a while and like retweet stuff or favorite things. And then one night, and they hadn't opened yet. I was getting these tweets from K&T. And then I had ordered a pizza on the air one night from Domino's. And we actually called Domino's and we're tracking our pizza as it was being made. And Carissa, she tweeted at us, don't ever order a pizza again. I will bring you food. And I said, all right, bring me some food. And it was amazing. She brought pies, like just the most amazing food I had ever eaten in my life. And we also had live band karaoke that night. And we had such a great time. We've been friends ever since, celebrating her anniversary for a while, monthly. And then we all get busy. And I have her on whenever she wants to. And whenever I'm like, hey, can you come play tonight? And I ask her to come play tonight.
What a great story.
So that's what happened.
That's lovely.
And Wiley's like, I'm not Noah Wiley. So
it's like a Hallmark movie.
Unfortunately.
It was fantastic. Thank you so much, Chris. It's been so much fun to be your friend.
Aw. Thank you. It's been fun to be your friend, too.
We play What's in the Box sometimes. Sometimes I go to her restaurant and I pull the reviews and we watch people do the, what is it called? The unwrapping? The deboxing? What's it called? Elliot was fascinated one night when we were watching people open up their things.
Yep.
Larry, you've been waiting very patiently. We were talking about pensions, and you were a professor at UIC, and we were talking about, you know, people often think, and Scott alluded to the contracts, the obligation that the state of Illinois has with the people who entered into these agreements, that you pay in, and then it's investing in the state and basically saying, later on when you retire, this will be here for you. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, that money was not reinvested the way it was supposed to be. The pensions were not funded into the 80s, into the 90s, into the 2000s.
It was shorted. Right.
It was used for other things. It was used as a credit card. And no one was really given the information. No one stopped to think, well, what are the implications if we, yes?
The Chicago Tribune editorial board did. Just want to throw that out there.
Did what?
Has been mentioning that for 20 years.
And it was happening since the 19, like not just since the 1980s, back all the way to the beginning of the 1980s.
And it was a wonderful, and I say this sarcastically, collusion of groups down there.
Right.
Even people who are involved in labor agreed to do it. And I think people in the leadership in the state thought it was a good idea. And people who were elected officials who were not leaders of the state all agreed to do it.
Right.
Was it just short-sighted politics that led them to do this?
It was short-sighted, I should say, but it was the idea of we're going to have more money, give this impression that we are putting more money, investing more into education, because and then like this is like one of those, you know, immediate costs that's on the books. Like everybody has a bill, they have to pay a mortgage and all that other stuff. It's like, okay, we're going to pay less. And then so we're going to have more money to invest in education.
And we're still paying our mortgage, but at some point
you're paying less.
Right, paying less.
We're still paying less than that. But pretty soon the bank is going to come calling, which the bank has. When you look at right now and you see, I think the reflection of the fact that, you know, that our ratings has gone down. And it's not just the fact the budget's been passed. It's just that issue hasn't been
resolved,
reconciled.
Hey, Larry.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, didn't mean to. I know that I want to remind everybody that you're there. What else did you want to add to the conversation? I don't want to leave you hanging.
Well, I guess the basic idea is I volunteer to pay into the Social Security system because I had been hired prior to the Reagan administration changing the rules in terms of requiring everybody to pay into it. I accepted my responsibility knowing full well that I was never going to see those dollars back unless I moved to another state. And that's a point I wanted to also bring up. Other states do allow, for example, North Carolina, you can be in their state retirement system as a professor at North Carolina State, et cetera, and collect Social Security at the same time. We in Illinois, our legislators never passed the legislation to allow that. And secondly, the state legislators did pass legislation which stopped any of the state universities or community colleges from rehiring as part-time teachers once they retired. We can no longer work for state schools for some crazy reason that they're afraid that we're going to be overpaid and we're going to be drawing what they call double dipping, which it's not double dipping, what the usual euphemism is referred to when somebody gets two salaries or two retirement programs. They passed legislation down there 4 years ago to stop us from behind. So all of us were fired from our part-time teaching jobs who were retirees and had to find other part-time jobs if we wanted to stay involved as educators. And so now I'm working at a Catholic university here in Chicago, the largest Catholic university in the United States, rather than back at my alma mater and my former employer because of the silliness of our legislators.
Hey, Larry, can I ask you a question as an economist? I'm sorry, this is going to get into the tall weeds for just a second, but I also want to know what Dan thinks of this. Illinois is kind of not really talking seriously about this. California is, Alabama is, and a lot of other states that don't tax retirement income are talking about taxing retirement income. Do you have is that a good thing, bad thing? As an economist, what do you think? I mean, and as someone who's retired,
as someone who's retired and an economist, I think it's a good thing.
Really?
Yes. Simply because those were tax-free dollars that I paid into, or before tax dollars that I paid into the state retirement system. So getting them back, I should be paying some tax on it.
But isn't the idea of that to encourage you to invest in your retirement, taking you off as a burden conceivably on the state or on the federal government or the Social Security system? And so that was the idea that it's tax deductible and pre-tax deduction. So that makes sense. But you think still taxing at the back end is the right thing to do, or is a good thing to do? Would you have it at a certain level? Let's say you're getting your income. You've been very smart, and your income is very high.
That's the thing. I think if the state were to do it like the federal government's been doing, imposing tax on Social Security for the high recipients, the high amount recipients, I think that would be an appropriate activity, especially given that the state is in such a money crunch. Again, maybe I'm too sympathetic to the needs of all the people of the state, and I've always been that way. That's why I stayed in the state with a lower salary at UIC than what I could have gotten you know, going to other universities and other schools. I mean, and in other states. But I think it's the right thing, and sometimes you have to do the right thing as opposed to the most popular thing. And so I would support something like that. But, you know, no one really thinks it through in the sense that there might be
no one thinks it through.
Right. I know. Larry, thank you so much for calling. I hope
I'm a big fan of yours. I've listened to you, I think, since day one. And I've been fortunate enough to get the two of your Lou Malnati's gift cards over the years. So I enjoy it. I'm angry with your Senator Katowski because I would have voted for him for governor unless he's setting himself up to be the one to run. That's why he got out of the Senate.
I've been trying to convince him of that, but he has taken the time to both devote himself to helping, again, families that are at risk and spending time with his own family not at risk.
Mostly to make the long green from that that sweet, sweet nonprofit money.
That's very true. Larry.
But you could make a ton of money as governor, as Dan Walker would prove, and Jim Thompson.
And Blagojevich. Please don't Golden.
Cite anybody who's been incarcerated.
Yeah. Larry.
Hey, but Larry.
But Jim Edgar's good company.
Thank you for what you had to say. It's an honor to hear that. It's because especially people like you who devoted your lives to making sure that young people were educated and they had every opportunity to be successful.
And it's Larry, explain guns and butter to me, okay?
We'll do it.
All right.
We'll do it.
Appreciate
Take
it.
Care.
You too. Coming up after this, we're going to talk summer wines and barbecuing, and we're also going to play a special round, a surprise round of What's in the Box. Esmeralda, I have sent you some of Roger Badish's reviews, and I hope he doesn't mind if I shared those with you. I think he's got different categories, so you can go ahead and pick those randomly. Senator, I've given you the easiest thing. Are you leaving? You can't leave. Okay, good. More after this on 720 WGN 312-981-7200 if you want to play What's in the Box coming up after this.